Welcome to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz. Dr. Teplitz is an attorney and he has a PhD in holistic health sciences. He is a pioneer in stress management and wellness. He has written 8 books and his 2 latest are Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change, and the #1 Amazon bestseller, Switched on Selling, Balance Your Brain for Sales Success. And now, here's Dr. Jerry Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternative is about are things that you can do for yourself to look at reaching levels of what I'm calling optimum health and wellness. Why do you have to start paying attention to this for yourself? Well, we've got the drug companies out there, and just recently Allergan, who manufactures Botox, agreed to pay a $600 million fine to settle a federal investigation because what they were doing were training their salespeople as to how to tell doctors to use Botox in ways that were never approved, including having them show how children could use this, which turned out to be very toxic for children and dangerous for children. So the more you can do for yourself as a healthy alternative, the better off you potentially are going to be in how you live and enjoy your life the most. What we're going to be talking about in this show is acupuncture and Chinese herbs. These come out of cultures that have been using these forms of medicine for thousands of years, whereas the Western form of medicine is maybe a couple of hundred years old at the most. So for doing something for thousands of years, I would say they've got something going on that is really spectacular that we can take advantage of. And my expert today will be talking about acupuncture and Chinese herbs and the whole concept of how you can apply this to your life. If you'd like to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can click on the globe or go to teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. What I first want to look at is what I call a breakthrough alternative. It's information that's new, exciting, things that you can use. Although in this show, I want to look at something that's very old that's exciting to think about, and that is using water as a method of healing. Turns out that 75% of Americans are in a chronic state of dehydration. As a matter of fact, in 37% of Americans, their thirst mechanism is so weak that they'll often think of it as hunger instead. Why is it important to stay hydrated? Well, even mild dehydration will slow down your metabolism up to as much as 3%. If you're going to a gym and working out, you potentially, if you're not drinking water, could wind up needing 24 hours for your body to actually return to proper hydration levels. Lack of water is actually the number one trigger for daytime fatigue from people. So when you think that you're getting tired during the day and that you didn't have enough sleep, well, you might want to look someplace else. It may be that you should be taking a glass of water. You can even use water to control hunger pains. The midnight hunger pains, they found in the University of Washington study that one glass of water will shut down the hunger pains of almost 100% of the people who are dieting. One of the places we need to look at having more water is in retirement communities, nursing homes, and in schools. In schools, kids sit at their desk, and if they're lucky, they may be able to drink some water during the break between classes. Yet water is so important to keep your brains functioning. And so for kids, just sipping water over the course of the day makes an enormous difference. For people who are in nursing homes, the elderly, in effect, we're depriving them of water because they have to change diapers more often and incontinency issues like that. Well, one of the things that it does is it causes more of a loss of their brain's ability to function properly just by not having enough water. So the notion of drinking 6 to 8 glasses of water, please look at following that. I want to talk to you about a book that I just released in July of this year, Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. It's a book that's designed to really allow you to handle those stresses that you're experiencing in your life with what's going on with all the chaos that many, many of us are experiencing. If you haven't lost your job, you probably know somebody who does. If you haven't lost your house, you probably know somebody who does. So I want to share with you a review that you can find on Amazon about managing your stress in difficult times, succeeding in times of change. It was a summary from Goodreads. Here is another great book that gets right to the point. This book is very easy to read and isn't full of a bunch of medical jargon. There are easy-to-follow instructions and many illustrations to go with them. An important chapter I found was on migraine headache relief. I get such terrible ones that last for 10 days or more. Are mine stress? I don't know. But what I do know is that the technique did relieve the pain. Not only that, but it was also very soothing and relaxing. It almost put me to sleep. This book is a great find for anyone, even if you think you've managed your stress well. What she's talking about is in the book, I've got a section on a Japanese pressure technique called shiatsu, and this shows you a treatment how to get rid of migraines in 5 minutes, and you can do it on yourself as well as other people. To learn more about the book, order it. You can go to either teplitz.com, Amazon, or you can also go to Barnes & Noble's. So I'd like to welcome my guest for this show, Cynthia Wallace. We're going to be looking at acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine, and Cynthia is an expert in this area. She first got introduced to the whole Oriental philosophy at a place in Tokyo called the Higdayo Clinic, and she can correct my pronunciation if I got it wrong. She also then got excited about what she was seeing, experiencing to that extent. She wound up getting a master's degree in traditional Chinese medicine at the International Institute of Chinese Medicine in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and she has been studying with people like Jeffrey Yen. She's in acupuncture. They call it sitting at the feet of a master, so you can watch them work, and that was with Dr. Shen in New York City. She lives in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and practices here now, and she's had over 15 years of experience doing acupuncture. And for listeners, even though acupuncture is thousands of years old, we didn't get introduced to it in this country until James Reston, who is a columnist for the New York Times, happened to be in China, and he needed appendicitis surgery, and they used acupuncture for his anesthetic. He wrote about it in the New York Times, and that was the first introduction in this country in a more mass way to it. So we're going to be exploring with Cynthia now the whole notion of acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine and how you can use it for looking for optimum health and wellness. So welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you, Jerry.
So what year was it that you first got introduced to acupuncture at the clinic in Tokyo?
Probably in the late 80s, I had already moved to Tokyo, and I started doing Qigong, which ended up being a gateway for me into receiving acupuncture and then later taking Chinese herbs for asthma.
For yourself?
So, yes, for myself. There's a lot of mold in Japan.
Uh-huh, okay. And so when you first saw acupuncture being done, what was kind of your aha about it? How did it strike you when you first saw it?
Well, it was a visceral experience. It wasn't so much an intellectual one because I entered as a client or a patient, if you will, and I began to receive treatments, and it was through the process of getting acupuncture and learning how to breathe correctly, that I began to really inhabit my body and come in and take responsibility for my basic biorhythm. So it really was not an intellectual experience for me. It was very much a visceral one.
And then how long was it before you then got so excited that you said, I need to study this stuff?
I think that it was a very organic process. There was, on a larger level, I had always known that I was going to be a caregiver. And right around between the ages of 27 and 28, I just happened to be in Japan when a gong went off. And there was a deep resonance somewhere in the larger aspect of my being that was a call to service. The acupuncture just happened to offer a pathway of service, but the larger message was that serving my fellow man was going to be my life's purpose, and acupuncture just offered me a pathway.
Great. Now, I hear terms like oriental medicine, I hear traditional Chinese medicine, Chinese herbs, herbal medicine. Are we saying all the same terms, or just with different words, or are there actually differences between the directions of all those three areas?
Well, if we look at oriental medicine, we can break it down and simplify it in terms of the history of herbal medicine, the history of acupuncture, and the history of nutritional sciences, and the history of qigong. So there are streams within oriental medicine. So not everybody who practices acupuncture is an herbalist. Not all herbalists are acupuncturists. There is a fine tradition of manual medicine where there are people that only do manual manipulation, and that is considered a very important part of oriental medicine. So the topic of oriental medicine is vast, and it spans over 5,000 years of intellectual building up of empirical knowledge, and then the development of theory, and then different family styles. So once it's sort of like nature itself, the closer you look, the more intricate it becomes.
And so when you're using and saying traditional Chinese medicine, if somebody uses that term, are they using kind of a subset of the term oriental medicine that they're talking about? So it's how does that fit into the picture?
Well, in the late 1940s, China was attempting to put a round peg in a square hole. So it attempted to create a curriculum for export to the Western world. And they wanted to create something more mechanistic that would appeal to the what they perceived was the Western mind, and to objectify it. And they came up with a system of syndrome differentiation. So it was, and it was, I believe, designed as a gateway for what the Western medical profession to begin to understand oriental medicine.
So oriental medicine then would be the broader term.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, great. And when you say Chinese herbal medicine, then you're just talking about one aspect again of oriental medicine.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, good. So now I know when people say oriental medicine, they're talking about a much bigger picture for how they're looking at things. And so,
I might interject, it might be helpful to see how I'm actually practicing the medical branch of an applied philosophy.
Go right ahead.
So the oriental philosophy has several branches to it, and medicine is just a branch. Sort of
okay.
Like when you go to a monastery, there'll be one monk who's a living library for the martial arts, and one monk will be a living library for the divinatory ritual ceremonial arts, and maybe one of the other monks will be into cooking, and he'll teach cooking, and another monk will be a living library for the medical arts. So really, I'm just practicing the medical branch of Chinese philosophy.
Got it. Now, one of the things that listeners need to be aware of when you go to somebody who does oriental medicine, you're talking a whole different language as to how the body works, how it's influenced. So it's terminology that is really pretty foreign to Americans in terms of understanding it because it's so different from Western medicine. How, because I know it's a big area, but what would you say would be kind of the basis for understanding what Oriental medicine is, its strong suit, and the best uses that we have of it with the with this difference in terminology to, that we have to also understand?
Well, I would like to begin by saying that as a student of the life force, if the life force is not something mystical. It can be understood. You can work with it methodically. You can scientifically engage with the life force to help create a higher level of order in the body. The fact that we use different nomenclature is just because it came out of a different era. These early scientists were still looking at nutrition. They were still looking at how emotions, they were still looking at social contexts and how illness can arise out of stressors created there. They were still concerned about sexuality, saw clearly the economic forces at work in health, and also the political ideologies and how they influenced medicine and the way we talk about health. So we're really just looking at another culture.
For the average American, what would you say, going to somebody who practices Oriental medicine in your vein, what does that offer for them from a kind of a holistic standpoint for them?
Well, luckily, everybody that comes to me brings a primary issue or complaint, and I begin there. And that will often lead me to an understanding of what that person's strengths and weaknesses are. And their body type or their constitution will give me deep insight into what their healing trajectory is going to be about, whether it be primarily nutritional or primarily emotional. But all of the different factors that affect human physiology are taken into consideration when I look at the tongue and the pulse. So the average person is going to be offered a pathway towards wholeness or healing.
When you're doing, for example, acupuncture with people, what would you say the typical things that they come and complain about would be that you're going to be working with them on?
Most commonly, I'm working with pain syndromes or doing janitorial work, cleanup after Western medical intervention.
Explain that a little bit more, the janitorial.
It might be useful to take a look at the fact that how many deaths are actually caused iatrogenically by Western medical intervention, being drugs or surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when people come in, they've run the gamut of these offerings and are at either the end of their line or worse. And they'll come in with a complaint, an original complaint, and it has been compounded by either the unfortunate side effects of what they've tried already or cleanup after surgical intervention. So a lot of what I do initially is cleanup. So I go in and I'm working with the blood and the fluids and to decontaminate or to restore meridian flows after things have been cut. And so the body can regulate itself again. So that is in a large part what I do with just about everybody that walks in the door. Sometimes it's the first couple of months and sometimes It ends up being the primary project.
Let me remind listeners that you're listening to Healthy Alternatives on Web Talk Radio, and we'll be back with Cynthia Wallace in just a moment. In this break, I'd like to talk to you about a book that I've written with Dr. Tony Alessandra called Switched On Selling, Balance Your Brain for Sales Success. This is a brain wiring approach to selling. Dr. Alessandra, he is a sales guru, written 20 books on selling, and what he does in every chapter, he puts down the techniques. What I do at the end of every chapter is I put this brain rewiring concept that you can use immediately so you're switched on for every aspect of selling by the time you finish reading this book. A review that's in Amazon from Kelly Barry wrote, "I have read and reread this book. It is new, leading edge way of I have read and reread this book. It is a new leading-edge way of learning how to sell, as well as a way to change or rewire mindset for selling. If you are stuck in the sales process, it is a leading-edge way of selling, especially during a recession. Got a special offer for folks who are listening to this internet broadcast. Friends of Dr. Alessandra and myself, who are all professional speakers, have donated $400 worth of digital gifts that you can get if you order the book online, but you need to go to order it through book.switchedonselling.com. Book.switchedonselling.com. Order it there, and then you'll also be able to get your gifts. I'd like to welcome you back to our conversation we're having with Cynthia Wallace on looking at Chinese Oriental medicine, actually, is the correct term. And her background is she originally was introduced to it at the Akiedo Clinic in Tokyo. She wound up getting so excited by what she saw with acupuncture that she wound up getting a master's degree in traditional Chinese medicine at the International Institute of Chinese Medicine in Santa Fe, New Mexico. She has studied with Jeffrey Yan, Dr. Shen, and she's been practicing over 15 years, and she now is in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And so, Cynthia, what would you say, because before the break we were talking about the cleanup you have to do, what's the most challenging aspect of working with folks for you?
I think finding a way to clearly articulate the nature of the challenge that is in front of them and helping them to understand that it's probably going to require a lifestyle change, where we have to take a look at diet and lifestyle as being the huge factors in the positive outcome of any physical challenge.
Now, Western medicine oriented folks are looking at, you know, what studies have been done validating stuff. In Oriental medicine, did they approach things from let's do studies on this, or was it looking at experiences people had, kind of replicating it that way and seeing and then evolving processes in that format? So how did they go about figuring this stuff out?
Well, this is a large subject, and I think the biggest challenge to those designing research today is to acknowledge that because we are completely dependent in any given treatment context on what's going on with the tongue and the pulse, over the course of a day, the qi in your body moves through the body systems, the organ systems, and every 2 hours there's a shifting that takes place within the physical body. So because we are dealing with a life force...
Explain that a little more in terms of what do you mean by a shifting every 2 hours?
Every 2 hours, the self-healing mechanism in your body, it's a self-regulating mechanism in your body, is moving through the organ system. For example, lung time is between 3 and 5 in the morning. Large intestine time is between 5 and 7. Between 7 and 9 is stomach time. As we go along this circadian cycle, we can only redirect the natural flow. We can't control it. But if the better the treatment, the more you take all these cofactors into equation, be it where we are in the time of day, where we are seasonally, what may be going on with the weather that day, and how that person's imbalance is manifesting in that moment. And to design or codify a treatment principle for a disease is to focus on what's wrong. And that might be the biggest difference between, say, someone who practices an art that works with natural law, such as acupuncture. We're going to want to use the natural forces to recreate balance. And Western medicine's primary focus is on disease. So I'm not always looking for a way to fix a problem. I'm just looking for a way to create higher function. And these are two different approaches. And one is interested in health, and the other is interested in seeing things as broken or creating a metaphor that we have to fight disease.
Can you talk a bit about herbal medicine part of what you do? Because I know that you put together very specific teas, for example, that people brew with all kinds of stuff in it. And how do you figure that out? How does that relate to what you're saying now in terms of looking for more of a holistic wellness approach for folks?
Well, the framework for understanding how herbs work really is based on the eight principles, where we're really looking at temperature and energetics. So people can often have an imbalance involving heat syndromes, like an inflammatory process. Some people are dealing with gastrointestinal illnesses. Some people may be working with a vascular imbalance, whether it be headaches or blood clotting. So depending upon what system of the body I'm going to interact with, I'm going to break it down and analyze it in terms of temperature and energetics. And herbs themselves have the ability to float up, to astringe, to consolidate. They have an affinity for various parts of the body. And we have some directional herbs or zonal herbs. So if I put a formula together with five herbs, and then I'll put the zonal herb to direct those herbs to that part of the body. So we're going to analyze it, break it down, and then put it back together again in a package and send the body a message using herbs that have each herb may have four or five different clinical functions, but I'm going to want to amplify two or three. So if I combine herbs together, I can synergistically amplify the functions I want to use and downplay the ones I don't by choosing the other herbs carefully.
What would you say the single most challenging aspect of your work is with what you're doing?
It's the communication, it's the development of rapport, and it's the acknowledgement that I may be someone's first experience with this huge philosophical cosmological model, and how I lead them through the door is going to dictate their relationship with, in some cases, an opening to health, an opening to wellness. So that's a huge responsibility, and I take that very seriously.
And what would your most satisfying scenario be as an acupuncturist herbalist?
I think when people realize that they heal themselves and they begin to take, they kind of grab the wheel, if you will, and they begin to enlist the help of their own divinity and their own inner physician, and they start taking command. That's probably the most satisfying process to watch. And it's so natural and organic that it's sort of like watering a plant and talking to it and playing the right music and making sure it gets enough light. It is a beautiful process to watch.
One of the things that I have seen over the years, for transparency, I do go to Cynthia for both herbs and acupuncture. And what I've seen is, for example, on the mundane level, when I get stomach problems, there's something that I wind up taking that she recommends called a curing pill. And within about maybe a half hour, many times, whatever the stomach stuff is gone. I've noticed things with colds that you can stop them before they manifest almost. So I've been impressed with, from a specific standpoint, when you got an issue, there are things that on the mundane level that can be done very quickly to help that. Is that something that you find overall happens with lots of folks, Cynthia?
Yes, and we're really looking at interacting with the upper respiratory system and the stomach. And those are closest to the door, if you will. So if the front door of the body is the lung, it's the first organ to interface with changes in the external environment. So we're meeting it at the door. So things that are more superficial are going to respond more quickly.
And so getting something like a little stomach thing, that's, you know, that can respond pretty quick then, because it's at the moment type of thing.
Yes.
So let me ask you, if somebody does want to find somebody in their area who does acupuncture, Chinese herbal medicine, how do they start looking and exploring?
Well, there's always the national boards that we everybody who practices Oriental medicine has to take the national boards, and they are overseen by the NCCAOM, and they do have a website, and that's www.nccaom.org. That would be
and all that stands for is National Council for the Certification of
Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine.
Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. And what else could they do then to find somebody?
I think it, depending upon what state they're in, they could begin to ask around at their local health food store or maybe someone they know who is a reflexologist or a massage therapist or a Rolfer. Sometimes these communities are networked together. And I've always found that word of mouth has been perhaps the most reliable way to find people that are good, because not all people that are good are going to advertise. So sometimes you have to search for the good ones.
So if somebody lives in Virginia Beach and would like to learn more about you, can you give them your website they can go to?
Yes, that would be www.ChineseAcupunctureClinicInc.com.
So ChineseAcupunctureClinicInc.com. So my guest today has been Cynthia Wallace, and I'd like to thank her for sharing with us some really fascinating things as to how to look at Oriental medicine, understand the dynamic that's going on, and how you can start looking at this as another alternative to become a healthy, wise person. So thank you, Cynthia.
Thanks, Jerry.
Next week, I'm going to be talking to Ruth Garath, who's the author of From Hired to Happy, The Secrets of a Vibrant Career and a Fulfilling Life. We're actually going to look at bringing the notion of happiness into the work environment for yourself. This will be an exciting show. You'll be looking at how you can use the whole notion of happiness for as a healthy alternative. I'm Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you've been listening to Healthy Alternatives on webtalkradio.net. You can learn more about me at teplitz.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you for listening. Look forward to talking with you some more next week.